We all remember the story of Palm Sunday. And as kids in Sunday school and growing up, it captured a lot of your attention because it is a dramatic story. Jesus stops for a moment in a village outside of Jerusalem and does something very unusual. It says in Luke, as he approached Bethphage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples saying to them, go into the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you'll find a colt there which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. And if anyone asks him, why are you untying it? Just say, the Lord needs it. Now the two disciples must have wondered what was going on. What's going on here? Because Jesus, the only time he ever rode was in the boat on the lake of Sea of Galilee. But he walked for hundreds of miles throughout Palestine in the Holy Land. But now he gives this unusual command, and it was only about a mile and a half to go to Jerusalem. He gives this unusual command, and the Lord needs it, he said. Did people know that this was going to happen? I don't think so. But he was going to face Jerusalem. He was going to come into the city, a king riding on a colt, on a donkey. Now, 500 years earlier, the prophet Zechariah proclaimed this, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion, in Zechariah 9. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and having salvation, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. You see, in those days, when war was on, the king would come in a chariot or on white horses, prancing and galloping into the city. But when it was peacetime, the king would ride on a donkey, proclaiming peace. This was the first of an 8-day celebration of Passover, when the Jews remembered their deliverance from Egyptian slavery. And Jews from all over the world, as far as they could come, were coming to Jerusalem. It was a busy time. Jesus was not the only one coming to Jerusalem for the Passover. Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, had come into Jerusalem to occupy the fortress and the praetorium. And this was filled with the security guards, just like the conventions, the Democratic and Republican conventions. They have all kinds of security, and that's what they had in those days. Herod Antipas, the king, the ruler of Galilee and Perea, the one who had beheaded John the Baptist, came in with great pomp and ceremony, replacing his father, Herod the Great. Such power and pageantry, the people were seeing that week. It was quite a spectacle. But Jesus came riding into the city on a little donkey. How would the people respond to that? How would they recognize that his kingdom was not of this world, but was of another world? Small chance, because he'd been teaching for 3 years and still nobody got it. Perhaps some of them would greet him with laughter, saying, look at how this king is coming. Is he going to take over everything and he's coming in peace? A carpenter from the hill country in Galilee, that hillbilly, so to speak, proclaiming himself a king. Perhaps some would say, he's a lunatic. How can he proclaim himself a king? He has no battalions, no divisions of armies, no chariots behind him. They would laugh at him. Of course, many would hail him with joy, welcoming him as an earthly king, coming to reestablish the throne of David, which had been unoccupied for so many years. They were ready to put a crown on his head for him to take over the kingdom of Israel. Among the crowds would be people who he had healed, some among the thousands he had fed, the spiritually weak that he had brought up. They had listened, and their lives had been changed. He spoke with authority, and he changed many, many people's lives. Listen to the last verse of the Gospel of John. This is a verse that many of you probably have never heard, but it says, there are also many other things that Jesus did, which if they were written one by one, I suppose that even the world itself would not contain the books that would be written. That's an amazing verse. He touched many lives. Jesus knew all of this, but he knew that just over the horizon was the cross. That was his destiny, looming like a monster ready to consume him. But Luke 9:51 says, in spite of all that, Jesus still resolutely headed for Jerusalem. As Jesus rides down in the city, about 3 kilometers to go, a mile and a half or so, 2 miles, the crowds are growing. And there's festive air because they're coming for the Passover, a great celebration. Even before Jesus arrives, the news came around to all the people that Jesus had done so many great things. He raised Lazarus from the dead. You can imagine the excitement that prevails. And you hear people saying to each other, have you heard the news? Lazarus was in a tomb and his body was beginning to decay, and Jesus raised him from the dead. This teacher from Nazareth said, Lazarus, come forth. And he threw off his burial clothes and came out. He still walked and breathed and lived again. Surely this had to be a Messiah, had to be somebody wonderful. And this king, this man was going to reestablish the kingdom of Israel. So the great crowds collected on one side, and they took palm branches and laid them on the ground, the big palm fronds on the ground for he and his donkey to walk on. And they were singing, Hosanna to the King. As it says in the hymn that we didn't sing real well, o'er all the way green palms and blossoms gay are strewn this day in festive preparations. See, I even know the words. I thought everybody would too. But Jesus looked over his waiting audience. He saw a mixture of expressions on the faces in the crowd. Perhaps Bartimaeus was there, a man who had received his sight, and no longer a beggar in rags, because he could then now support himself. How about Zacchaeus, the tax collector? Zacchaeus paid back his debt to society. He had made his peace with God. And the lepers that he healed, the skin was now no longer falling off their bodies, but were healed. How about Jairus' daughter, who came back from death after experiencing her death? Lazarus and Mary and Martha were all there. Their lives reflected the love in their hearts for the man who had brought them back from a terrible existence. There were also sinister faces there, squinty eyes, waiting for one wrong move to be made so they could put down this person they think was going to have a rebellion. The Sadducees and the Pharisees were there, the keepers of the law, the spiritual leaders, waiting for one little slip up so they could grab him and arrest him. The Romans were there, the guards, the security guards in their armor. They were waiting to crush any uprising. Jesus realized, however, he knew that the Hosannas of today were going to be the crucified him of tomorrow. They were going to take him and say, if you're the King of the Jews, take yourself down from the cross. And then they would start saying, crucify him, crucify him. Now Jesus was descending along the Mount of Olives. And the crowds were thronging around him. And the apostles, you know, they were kind of awestruck. And how could all this be happening? And how were they reacting to all this? Perhaps Judas was probably the one who thought, this is great. Because I'm the treasurer of the apostles, and now I'm going to have a lot of money because we're going to have a big kingdom, not knowing that he was going to betray the Lord very shortly. And I imagine Peter walked along with his chest stuck out with a sword in his hand, ready to take care of anybody who came to Jesus, because he was ready to be the man. He says to himself, maybe it was worth to leave the fish nets and the boats. Maybe at last we're going to have what we deserve. We're going to have our king. We're going to have our king. I'll be working for a king, the king of Israel. Perhaps there was Thomas, a bit skeptical about everything that was going on, wondering what was going to happen next. And maybe Andrew was a quiet guy who was all overwhelmed by it all. But look at all these small groups that Jesus talked to, and now there are thousands. There are thousands praising him and saying, Hosanna. What about James and John? James and John were the ones who said, can I be on your right hand in the kingdom of heaven? But they were thinking that Jesus was going to establish a kingdom on earth. Now it's our time to reign, James and John. They were all in Jerusalem. Loving faces, sinister faces, anxious apostles. And all of a sudden, as they were approaching Jerusalem, the throng stopped. The whole procession. You know, it's like rush hour on I-25. You know, you got the slow down, the speed up, and slow downs and speed ups. You know, that happens. And somebody in the background probably said, "Why don't you guys move on? Go ahead. Come on, Jesus, get going. Why don't you move on?" If they had horns on their donkeys, it would be like a rush hour in New York City, leaning on the horn. As they say, taxi drivers in New York City drive with a horn and a gas pedal. There's no such thing as a brake. I heard that was true in Tijuana as well. But the people who came to Jesus could see that it was he who had stopped the parade. They saw his body beginning to shake. And they thought he was laughing because of all the people that were around him. That would be natural. But they saw his face. They saw his face. He was crying. He was not laughing. He reacted emotionally many times. And when he saw the poor, he saw the hungry, he saw the people sinning, he saw the ill. The scriptures repeatedly say that Jesus had compassion upon people. And there's only two times when Jesus cried, and one was when Lazarus died, his friend. You remember Mary and Martha were both weeping, and Jesus wept with them. But why was he crying? Why was he crying now? He was ready to be elevated as King of the Jews. Well, they had not heard the message of peace. That's why he was crying. They got the wrong message. Listen as I read Luke 19. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, your children within your walls. They will not leave one stone upon another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." They had eyes to see, but they had missed the whole point of why Jesus was here. And sometimes we too, don't we? Jesus said, "I didn't come for that purpose. I came so that you would love your enemies as yourself. I came so you would have me in your heart." He doesn't expect us to love Rome. We cannot love Rome. We must love the Lord. Rome was not seen as the power of love, but we wanted Jesus. Jesus wanted them to say, "Forget about Rome. Think of my kingdom. That's what that's all about." These were God's people, God's chosen people, but still they did not understand the Messiah. And even to today, our Jewish friends don't understand the Messiah. They were so close to his message. They could touch him, but they still didn't know his message. What a contrast. He sits upon a beast of burden, and he sees the tower of the temple silhouetted in the sky. He sees the temple stones being taken down because that's what happened. The temple was destroyed a few years after his death. He didn't recognize the Messiah. They didn't recognize the Messiah when he came, when he was right in front of us. How different their lives could be. How different the history of Israel could have been if they had recognized Jesus as the Messiah. But Matthew and Luke tell us sometime earlier, Jesus looked down upon the city and cried out in Matthew 2:23, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I have longed to gather your children as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you are not willing. I had told you the word, but you are not willing." He sees people that were concerned about other things, about taxes, income taxes. Good time of year to be worried about that, isn't it? Worried about job security. Worried about their health or lack of it. Does he see people who are so busy doing things here and there and running about that they're unable to see what the real eternal importance is? Does he see people who recognize him for what he is? Messiah, the Son of God. And Jesus turned and looked at the crowd. And he turns and looks at us too today. On this Palm Sunday, we're getting ready for Holy Week and Good Friday and Easter Sunday next week. I wonder if when he looks into your eyes and into your heart, is he going to weep once again? Is he going to weep? What will he see in you? Where will your heart be? Is he the Lord of your life, or are you looking for another king? Will he weep for you when he sees you? This is the message for Palm Sunday.